working on stable spatial patterns of nitrate in headwater stream networks allow identification and mitigation of critical source areas.
Thanks a lot, Ryan. I wanted to give you a challenge in the length of the title. So. I'm really grateful to the organizers of the session and to the sponsors of the session. Thanks for letting me speak today. My expertise is as an ecosystem ecologist. So today what I'm talking about isn't so much the instruments, but the experimental design and monitoring frameworks that we can use to better understand nitrogen management. We're all familiar with the problems of excess nutrients. In fact, you can see them from space. This is an image from 2010 where you can see a large algal bloom that extended across most of the Baltic Sea. This is a problem with a global scope. It's widely believed that we have exceeded planetary boundaries in what the Earth system can sustain as far as the delivery of nutrients, particularly phosphorus and nitrogen. In fact, it's considered to be second only to loss of biodiversity as an urgent environmental issue. These problems are expected to get worse before they get better. This is a projection of fluxes of inorganic nitrogen and inorganic phosphorus. So in most areas, particularly if you notice in the developing world, these fluxes are expected to increase. So those are the areas where water quality most directly is associated with human health. Now, if we come down a little bit, this is the view at 30,000 feet. This is a picture from England. I thought we could do a disciplinary Rorschach test. When you see this photo, what do you see as far as challenges in understanding nitrogen? Not a rhetorical question. Just feel free to yell it out or raise your hand. What do you see as far as complexity in this photo? Okay, so we've got lots of different patches, different kinds of land use, some urban up here, agricultural. I can tell Mark wants to say something.
There's just a lot of space there.
So it's a large, yeah. So a lot of complexity, a dynamic ecological mosaic. On top of that, you have these clouds that are moving across and then are giving you temporal variation. There's evapotranspiration is changing. So the past speakers have done a really good job showing why this is complex. But if you get down on the ground level, this is my friend François Rouault, who works for the French agricultural INRA. He has to decide where is he going to take his water measurement, where is he going to deploy his high-frequency nitrate sensor. Really what he wants to know is where and how often does he need to measure water quality to learn how to improve it. Now there are two sources of complexity, or bias you could say, in how we address that question of where to quantify fluxes. On the spatial side, we have what we call the headwater conundrum, where most current monitoring frameworks are focused on overall fluxes, so delivery of nutrients, loads in rivers to the ocean or to lakes. And from a eutrophication perspective, that makes a lot of sense. At a large scale, you see that the net input of nitrogen is strongly correlated with the net output of nitrogen through these river systems, though you notice the difference in units, where a lot of that nitrogen is either retained or removed in these catchments. However, as you move to a smaller scale, there's a breakdown in the relationship between nutrient inputs and nutrient outputs. We see a large diversity of nitrogen fluxes independent of land use. And this is ecologically important and also important from a management perspective because 90% of global river network length is in these small catchments, smaller than 15 square kilometers. On the temporal side of things, this is repeat images from the same stream. We like to go out and measure, characterize ecological functioning of the stream when it's in the base flow conditions. That's, first of all, it's when it's safe to get out in the stream. It's also more convenient to constrain fluxes. However, it's now understood that more than 90% of the annual flux is occurring during these high flow measurements, We're not just concerned with concentration. We need to understand what's going on during these large events. So we can address either one of these problems in isolation, right? We can go out and measure all of these headwater streams, or we can plop a high-frequency sensor in this stream and understand across the whole hydrograph how nitrogen is changing. The intractable problem is when we try to solve both of these problems at the same time. And even in a developed country, we can't plop $500 $20,000 sensors throughout the stream network, let alone in a developing country where these issues are most pressing. So we kind of scratched our head for a long time about these issues and came up with a relatively simple conceptual framework of how we could use the stream itself as a sensor of the spatial and temporal variability in nitrogen fluxes. So if you, we applied three hypothetical solutes in equal amount to a catchment. So this is just a catchment that we created in a simple model. And we hypothesized that depending on the extent of the grain and extent of the patches where you're adding these solutes, you would get different spatial patterns in the stream network. When you apply the solutes in kind of this fine grain distributed fashion, you only see variability at small spatial scales. So this is subcatchment area. And these points are the different sampling points that you see throughout the stream network. As you move to a larger extent, that collapse in spatial variability gets pushed to a larger spatial scale. So we thought that we could use the spatial variability to identify the size and also extent of these patches. If you're interested in management and decreasing the fluxes of these elements from the catchment outflow, you can, in a relatively simplistic way, identify the relative importance or influence of any one of these subcatchments on outflow using the difference in concentration and then the ratio of the sizes. This is, of course, assuming that specific discharge is the same, which is not the case in many situations. Now, from a temporal perspective, thinking about how pulses of nutrients are going to move through these systems, we realize that in an asynchronous system, where those subcatchments are moving in different directions, you lose your temporal variability as you go to a larger spatial scale, and that outflow has dampened. There's destructive interference. Whereas for a synchronous system, if you're trying to understand the max nitrogen or the max oxygen or the minimum oxygen, you can capture that at the outflow. So a single high-frequency sensor at the outflow of one of these catchments can tell you what's going on. And then, of course, that's associated with the temporal variance that you observe at different spatial scales. And then you can determine the representativity, or representativeness, I never know which noun to use, of a single sampling in time of that spatial pattern by crossing these two proxies. So basically looking at the correlation between water quality at a single moment of time, and then the long-term water quality signature. Now, it's great to come up with that simple hypodeductive framework. It's hard to find data where you can actually test if those patterns are true. So we use data from Western France, where we observe a large diversity of nutrient fluxes. So some of these catchments have almost no nitrogen output. The color of the arrow represents the flux. Some of them get up to 70 and 80 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year, so they're losing a lot of nitrogen. We focused on two catchments that were near the University of Rennes, where we were located. That actually wasn't our choice. We found a data set on some floppy disks that my collaborator Gerard had, and we thought we could test this conceptual framework with this data set. So there were 56 agricultural subcatchments nested in these two larger catchments, the Queneau and the Rance. They were sampled periodically over 10 years. The original motivation for the sampling was they wanted to correlate landscape characteristics with water quality. I think that many of us in the room have probably done that. So they calculated topographic indices, they did detailed mapping, they looked at depth of soil, and none of the parameters fell out as a very strong predictor of water quality, of nitrogen concentration in these streams. But it was this rich data set, both spatially and temporally, since we had repeat measurements from these spatially extensive sites. So we calculated what we call the subcatchment structure, or spatial stability of water quality in these headwater catchments. For each one of these sampling points, so here's the hydrograph for the Queneau River, For each one of these sampling points, we regressed the snapshot concentration rank with the flow-weighted mean concentration. So this was our proxy for the overall water quality in that catchment. So for this point, it was a relatively poor correlation, but for this point on the hydrograph, it was rather high. So we took these correlation coefficients and mapped them across the hydrograph. So I'll show you first for inorganic carbon, which we may not care about as much, but we found that inorganic carbon during low flow periods and during high flow periods looked the same. So there was a spatial stable pattern in the headwaters for inorganic carbon. The same was the case for nitrate. So the same catchments at base flow period, when we go out and do all of our detailed measurements, during these flood events, those were the same problem catchments. So that low flow sampling, spatial sampling, is actually representative of what nitrate looks like during these flood events. Then it was different. We didn't see that for phosphorus, another parameter of concern as far as eutrophication is concerned. We also were interested in how this first flood after the dry season, we saw a big reorganization of water chemistry, where almost all of those correlation coefficients dropped down. That was a time where things were rearranging in the landscape. As far as our prediction that synchrony, or the temporal, whether the temporal signals are moving up and down at the same time, was associated with this spatial stability, we didn't find that was the case. Most of these parameters had high structural stability, but only a minority of them were strongly synchronous. So we think in this landscape, it's because the difference in concentration among these subcatchments is very large. Now, I did do some original work for this project. When I was a postdoc, we went out 10 years later and resampled all of these points. We saw some differences in long-term trends, so points that fall below the one-to-one line represent a decrease, so a large decrease in phosphorus. But what was really interesting to us was there were strong correlation coefficients even 10 years later. So when we went back onto the landscape and sampled these sites, despite large changes in land use, the same catchments had good water quality, the same catchments had bad water quality. So we think that's really associated with resilience of these catchments rather than inputs of what we're doing. Differences in residence time in the groundwater and the soil, differences in vegetation are affecting that. Thinking about identifying the spatial scale of drivers of chemistry, we observed that there was a decrease in spatial variance. Here's the subcatchment size. So as you move down, we saw convergence to the mean. So this is showing that at this scale, these elements are moving through the system conservatively. It's just really mixing. But what surprised us was when you looked at the temporal variation, so in this case, the coefficient of variation for all of these points, we expected this to decrease with spatial scale. But we saw basically the same condition, where it was converging. This black line is the system mean. For most parameters, the outlet is pretty close, though nitrate did decrease some. That means that if you have a research catchment that's in a small hill slope and you put your high-frequency sensor in it, if you're down here, way below the system mean, that's not going to be representative at all of what's going on throughout the catchment. So that can have some implications for where to deploy these sensors. So just in summary, we observed a preservation of temporal variability moving downstream for most solutes. That ranking of subcatchment water quality and collapse thresholds were stable on event and then also decadal timescales. And that diversity in temporal variability regimes means that concentration and flux regimes can't be extrapolated among headwater catchments. So this is good news and bad news. We can understand the general water quality, but we can't identify mechanisms with a single high-frequency point in the catchment. But periodic synoptic sampling of headwaters can identify critical source areas for some parameters like nitrate and or subcatchment resilience. Thank you very much.
Is there a question?
Figure that that's going to follow the same migration of
That's so the question's about, is there some kind of tracer, by a geochemical tracer, hydrological tracer, that we can use to try to get at these same questions? And that certainly is the holy grail. We observe a lot, kind of the what we always say is each catchment is unique, right? So you're going to find a strong correlation in one region or one catchment may not hold for a different area. So we've used nitrogen isotopes to try to identify what percentage of the nitrate was lost as it's moving through the catchment. But that, of course, depends on what the signature of your inputs was. So that's going to look very different in a pristine catchment than in a highly impacted catchment. So many groups are working on that, and that certainly is a... If you have any ideas, we are all ears.